I'd like you to turn to Ephesians chapter 4. While you're turning to it, I'd like to mention that we'll be leaving, God willing, Saturday morning for Marsh Harbor, and we'll be there for a couple of weeks. So we appreciate your prayers. Oh, do break into the chapter down to verse 29 of Ephesians 4. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tender hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. Remember, Tuesday night we focused our attention on the word forgiveness. And tonight, just sort of the opposite there, we want to focus our attention on the word bitterness. Now, there's so much we could pick out of the chapter. Here's something that we do. You know, here's the side that we take the initiative when it says, grieve not, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth. Let all bitterness, let all wrath, let anger, let clamor, let evil speaking be what? Put away. It's an active term. It's something that we can do, put away with the grace of God and with the help of God. But the reason why I chose the word tonight, just the word bitterness, it's amazing how much in the Bible that's said about it. And, not suggesting for a moment that anybody here is guilty of bitterness, but there's always a possibility of, as the apostle puts it, a smoldering resentment that could lead eventually to bitterness. All of us are capable of developing this, but medical science now tell us that one of the most damaging things for people to injure one's health, amazing enough, is bitterness. A man went into this particular clinic. In fact, he had been under treatment for several years. I'm not going to go into detail about the man's life, except to say that he was making $100,000 a year, but he was always sick. And the type of sickness he had, that the doctor could never really pinpoint it. And yet it was evident that he was sick. His pressure would rise, and then it would fluctuate, it would come back down. It was a host of problems that this man developed. He was on seven different medications. Then the doctors discovered it. Listen to this. For 40 years, even though his father was dead, he hated his father with a bitter passion as no man probably had up until that time. And had to send him to a psychiatrist. And they found out the root cause of that man's illnesses in life was bitterness. Now, the amazing part about it, that when he realized what it was, and he owned up to it, and they told him how, that he ought to work at this, and was it worth it, something that happened so many years before. And he made up his mind that things were going to be different. And, it happened. His pressure was stabilized. He was getting better. And he threw away the seven different medications that he was on. Does it seem possible? You better believe it's possible. And beloved, let me tell you something. And if you do not believe it, take heed, because if it ever becomes a time where it ever develops in your heart, it'll destroy you. It will. You talk about cancer eating at the body. Well, bitterness eats at the soul. And eventually has an effect, of course, on the body. And that's why it is so important. In fact, one doctor said it'll kill you faster than overeating. Well, take it for what it's worth. I don't know. I'm not a real expert on that. But that's what this particular doctor said. And it'll give you ulcers, emotional turmoil, by just rehearsing old grudges and letting bitterness develop in the heart. Now I want you to turn tonight to 2 Samuel And perhaps that's one of the greatest narratives that we have on this particular subject. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 16, and we're going to read verse 5. Remember the background? Dear David was dethroned, and as he was going out to Beth-Huram, Shimei met him. Know the story well, but I want to read it. Verse 5 of 2 Samuel 16. And when King David came to Beth-Huram, behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth, and he cursed still as he came. And he cast stones at David and all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on the left. And thus said Shimei, when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, thou man of the devil. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son, and behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. Hard words, aren't they? Then said Abishai, the son of Zariah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. And the king said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zariah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said unto him, curse David, who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son which came forth of my bowels, seeking my life, how much more now may this Benjamite do it? If my son can do it, how much more this Benjamite do it? Let him alone. Let him curse. The Lord has bidden him, or the Lord has allowed it. You see? The Lord didn't necessarily give the command for him to do it, but the idea is, gave him permission. Just leave him alone. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. Boy, what an attitude. What a way to react. I have to confess, it's not an easy way to react. You need the grace of God. You need the help of the Lord. And this was a family-related a problem that developed into bitterness, and Shimei was a bitter man because of the matter of Saul's house. And when you stop to think of it, it was a lie, an outright lie he told or said about David. David loved Saul. David protected Saul. Saul was a man that was demon-possessed, seemingly, and David could never please that king. And Shimei was wrong, and it was a deliberate lie. And it was all because of what David had done in his life that Shimei had come out to him in this manner. And it's amazing how David just kept his cool. And he said, listen, the Lord has allowed it, permitted him, leave it alone. Maybe God will requite me this day. And instead of a curse, maybe the blessing of God will come to me. What a wonderful attitude. His bitterness against an anointed man was a serious thing. Shimei had no doubt about it, was a bitter man. We have children who resent authority to the point that they too can become very bitter. That's right, even children can develop bitterness. And wives can resent the husband's authority in the home. And if they're not careful, they too can develop a spirit of bitterness. And then, of course, the employees can develop bitterness. Those they work for, it's very, very easy. They can shout not fair and be in that particular environment for many years and be very unhappy and very miserable. And then bitterness can develop. In churches, well, we have to be very careful in churches, because I haven't noticed this in particular in our church, but I know many places where I travel, I know some churches that have been destroyed because men who were jockeying for position, and they played politics in the church to get the position. And you'd be surprised how much bitterness that's developed. I know one particular church, you got your seatbelt on? They actually came to blows and fought fist fight right inside of the meeting. Alright? If you think the devil can't work inside of a chapel building just because it's called a church, you're making a big mistake. In fact, I know two particular places that came to what we call blows. In Bermuda many, many years ago, and I know one dear man, my father never got over it. Just a young Christian. Never got over it. He told me that for many, many years. He wasn't bitter as a result, but he could never understand it. I said, Papa, I can tell you what happened. Just watch, son, tell me, because I can't figure out till this day. There was a spirit of bitterness in that church because they were jockeying for position. They wanted the position. He said, you know, you're right. Never failed. Another place was a Baptist church. Thank God that particular church, both of those churches, by the way, got back on their feet. The bitter people got out, and the church went on. And there are two fastest growing places over the years that I can think of. So God still got the victory over it, but it was nearly destroyed, I tell you. Bitterness is an awful thing. And so even though Shimei lied about David, David said, leave him alone. And of course, the other astonishing thing was that David's men, you see, it starts a chain reaction. By the way, David's men were getting just as angry, and if they weren't careful, they too could have developed a spirit of bitterness the way this man was carrying on. And so many times it can produce a chain reaction. But David said, put up your swords, ye sons of Zariah. I tell you, David was a great man of God. In spite of his problems, he was a great man of God. And I really admire him. And he didn't allow the chain reaction to go on. He said, let me just lift his head from his shoulder. That's my way of putting it. Let me cut off his head, David. Why should this dead dog talk about our king like that? David said, let be. Let be. He said, what have I to do? Let him curse. The Lord has permitted him to do this, and I'm going to have to take it for a reason. Of course, this is the mark of a matured man. David was a matured man to react like this. He looked above his enemies, and you know what he did? He saw God. Many years ago, I heard this statement, and I think it's very precious. A good way to avoid becoming resentful or bitter is try never to focus our attention on the person, but rather on the problem. Let me repeat that. A good way to try to avoid resentment and bitterness is to focus on the problem rather than the person. If you identify the person and the problem as one, we're going to get very resentful to the person. Now, that requires a lot of working and development. That takes time. But if you can separate the two, problem, well, what is the problem? And the person, you know, this person is the person. He's my brother. He's my sister. She's my sister. The problem, well, that's way up the problem. It might be painful. It may hurt. It may be very troublesome, but, however, can God do something about the problem? Yes. Okay, I'm going to start praying for this, my brother, about that particular problem. The best and fastest way to avoid resentment or bitterness is to start praying for your enemy. Now, boy, the first time you go to pray for him, it's going to be very hard. You can hardly get his name or her name out of your lips. You strain the name out. Praise and call by name. You'll be amazed every day when you start using that particular name, the burden will go, the resentment will diminish, and there won't be room for the root of bitterness to develop in the heart. You know? See, it's very easy for a preacher to get up and say, "You should never be bitter." That sounds what you call forthright preaching. But how can I avoid it? Because I'm faced with the facts or the problem throughout my life. You see? Well, these are just a few suggestions. Of course, it's the love of Christ in us that gives us the help to avoid this as we go through life. And the last part of Ephesians 4, and I hope to conclude with that, will also show it. Don't turn to it now. How and why we should show love and forgiveness and not bitterness. Okay, let me give another example before we move to the last part of Ephesians 4. Now, it may not have been very tactful. However, God had given him that revelation. Joseph was to be the leader, but he may not have been very wise as a young man, as a teenager. You see? That might be typical. We're not going to hold it against him. But the thing is this. It certainly did not give the brothers right to do what they did. So what happened? Jealousy. And from jealousy sprung the scornful attitude. Then hatred. And bitterness. And so they conceived a plot how they might get rid of him. You know the story well. And it was a very trying time for Joseph, because Joseph still loved his brethren. He went out there to see how they were doing, to bring word back again to the father, to let the father know what had happened, that the boys were doing okay, and so on. He still loved his brethren, and then they threw him in a pit. And I believe Joseph looked up out of the pit, and he was sort of mystified. What are my brethren doing to me? I don't believe Joseph even detected the bitterness and the jealousy in the hearts of those boys. That's how much his heart was filled with that relationship, that love that he had for his brethren. I don't believe it ever dawned on him that they were developing this root of bitterness. Now the thing is this. He's down in that pit. He hears them talking about killing him. And from killing him, then one decides, no, that's not the best thing to do. Let's sell him to this caravan that's going south. At least he'll be out of sight, out of mind, never be a father to us, and he'll never be able to reign over us, as he said. Hey, but what shall we tell our father? Well, you know what happened then. He killed the goat and dipped the coat of many colors in the blood of the goat and brought it home to dear old Jacob. Father Jacob, you can imagine how torn that man's heart must have been. Joseph, he cried, he wept, he went into mourning for days, in fact, weeks. Well, what about Joseph? Roughed up, sold on the slave market, as it were, goes south, and he becomes a slave to Potiphar. You know how she deceived him, and he had to run to escape the clutches of that immoral woman. And then when the master came home, she told him what Joseph tried to do. Boy, that's a hard pill to swallow. By this time, the average Christian may have looked up to heaven and said, "Look, oh God, you gave me a revelation that I was going to reign and rule. Is this the kind of rulership that I'm entering into? I'm a slave, I'm a servant. And now I'm falsely accused, and now look at me. I'm in an Egyptian dungeon. God, what's happened to the revelation?" Well, we have no record of Joseph ever entertaining any doubts whatsoever about God's plan. And a little light shines into the dungeon when two men had dreams. And he interpreted both the dreams. One was a favorable dream, and the other was unfavorable. The last words to the one that would be lifted to his position was, "When you are restored, remember me." That's all he could hope for, to be remembered. See, Joseph really wanted to get out. He wanted out. He was human. But even in all of this, we have no record of Joseph ever saying anything about his brothers. Then came the day when he was lifted, and then he saw God's master plan as he was made second in command. Well, the real test came when he saw those boys, those brothers of his, coming down to Egypt many, many years later. He looked at those fellas, and I know he thought of those boys, those brothers, many times. His heart was just moved while he was talking to them. He deliberately talked a bit rough so that they wouldn't detect who he was. And you remember what happened? He ran inside, and he just wept and wept for what? Bitterness? Joy. An unusual joy. He was overcome, overwhelmed with it, that he had to run out to hide his emotions. When he got out in that room, special room, then he wept. He just burst. He couldn't hold it in. There's no indication of bitterness there. But the last part of the story is what all children, and I like to come to, along the end of the life of Joseph. When he finally revealed himself, the brothers fell back, awed and fearful. Joseph! He said, I am Joseph. And Joseph was there. He could see the fear all over their faces. They were smitten with it, terrorized, panic-stricken. And Joseph said, be not afraid, my brethren. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Because of this, I am now in command here in Egypt, the second in command, and God has put me here for a purpose. But in all of this, those boys still believed that the day would come that Joseph would take vengeance. You wait till Papa Jacob died. Well, Jacob died. And it says that they were afraid, feared. Now that Jacob was dead, now we're going to get the vengeance of Joseph on us. But did it happen? No. The same words were repeated. And here was a man who had caused it looked justifiable cause to be angry and even to be bitter. I'm not saying it's the best thing to do. I'm saying it's a justifiable cause. I mean, to be angry and upset all those years that he was in that dungeon, that time that he was away, the way they sold him like a common criminal, like a slave. But in all of this, Joseph was not there. We don't have time to read the account in chapter 19 of 2 Samuel. But listen, payday came. Here is the parallel. David is now restored to his kingdom. And when he was passing through Bethurim, who do you think was the first man that came and fell down on his knees before David? Shimei. That's right. Remember? And he begged David. He said, oh, David, I have done foolishly before thee, my king. And he repented and begged him to spare his life. And then David's men again, Abishai and the sons of Zariah, they said, let us at him now. Otherwise, let's put him to death. He deserved death. And you remember what David said? There shall be no killing this day. This is a day of joy. This is a day of victory. No killing. Look at Shimei, and he says, your life will not be taken from you. Later, of course, they had restrictions on Shimei, but David told him, you will not be put to death. The king had right to put that man to death, but he didn't. David never allowed a root of bitterness or resentment to swell up in his heart. He left it all in the hands of God. He said, perhaps God will requite me and change this around. And that's what God did. He changed it around. You know what I like to do when I'm faced with situations of this nature? I've never had nothing like David or like Joseph. But I try to say, Lord, I leave it in your hand. I turn it over to you. But, and I want the help and the grace to sort of turn my back on it as well. Because if I don't, and I'm defeating my prayer. It's good to just turn it over to the Lord and let God work it out. Whatever the problem is, you can't work out all these problems on your own. But with His help, we can. I remember that reading about two men in World War II. There were a German soldier who was wounded badly and an American soldier who was wounded badly. And they had them both stretched out side by side. And the German couldn't speak English, the American couldn't speak German. What were they going to do? They couldn't converse. They were in pain. They looked at one another and they smiled. Now that's a common language. That is a language that everybody understands, isn't it? When you smile, you can tell they're happy. When there's not a smile and a frown, you know they're unhappy. Face can speak volume. And you know what the German did? He wanted to let the American soldier know that even though they were fighting against one another, there was nothing in his heart. So what he did, he took his helmet off and put it on the head of the American and took the American's helmet and put it on his head. He exchanged helmets. Even in war. Just to let the American fella know that he was only fighting because he had to by his superior. No bitterness. Now we come to the narrative of the few minutes that we have left. It says that we're not to grieve the Holy Spirit of God by letting bitterness, wrath, anger, and so on be put away. What the apostle is saying, we need to be considerate. Consideration that be ye kind one to another, tender heart. And it says, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. I always like to, I fail many times, but I like to, that last part, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Suppose God treated me the way I treated an individual. Suppose God reacted to me like I react to an individual. If I can't find grace in my heart to forgive, suppose God says, okay, I won't forgive you. I'd be in an awful predicament, wouldn't I? See, that's why the apostle drove that point home. Even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. If he could capitalize on that, it'll make it a lot easier and a lot lighter. And I'll always focus that very point in my own life. See? Even the Levitical law of Leviticus 25:42, the poor hired brother says, thou shalt not rule over him with rigor. Why, if a poor slave got that kind of treatment, and he's saying, well, how much more as believers we are to be kind and gracious. Remember what Abraham said to Lot? Don't let's fight. I like that. Don't let's fight. After all, we're related. We're blood relatives. And so too to the body of Jesus, we say, don't fight. We're blood related. You know, I can disagree with you, you know, but I'm not going to fight you. You're not going to fight me. I know that. But these are just little helps to guard us for the future, that we might at least guard our hearts in these things as we go through life. What about the Lord Jesus when they cry, he saved others, himself he cannot save. Thank God that he didn't try to save himself. That was his reputation. And on the cross, all that they had vented on him, all that they had done to him, from crucifixion to spitting in his face, and to really buffeting him with their fists. And the angry howls and the scorning and the mocking and the jeering and the plaited beard or the plucked beard. The crown of thorns that punctured his sacred brow. And putting a robe over him and hitting him with a reed, a rod, several times, beating him on the head, and no doubt hitting that crown. All of that that they had done to the Son of God, and yet on the cross he cried, Father! What? Let me hear it. Forgive them. They know not what they do. I tell you, strong language. So Paul is saying, be considerate. Then he's saying, be compassionate, because he's saying he's using a word that's very precious, that tender-hearted. You know? Now, tender-hearted doesn't mean tender feet. Meek doesn't mean weak. We have to learn that. Sometimes in churches, we have to be firm. We have to be firm even in our life. Church leaders have to discipline. That doesn't mean that they do not love, because they discipline. Meekness doesn't mean that you can't discipline your child. Neither does it mean that the church can't discipline an individual. In fact, it doesn't mean that they cannot rebuke an individual. The leaders of the church have that authority and have that right, if it is done in love and in meekness and in grace and in tender-heartedness. So, this is very, very important. Be tender-hearted. Be kind. Be gracious. But a man, and you heard me give this years ago, but it bears repeating. He had trouble with his vehicle outside of a farm house, several acres, and just one house there. So he walked down to the house, and the man was very kind. He gave him something cold to drink. In fact, I believe it was a cold glass of milk, and gave him lunch. They went up to the highway and helped him with his vehicle, and he pulled out his wallet with a lot of cash. And the farmer said, no, 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 no. He said, you can't pay for this, sir. He said, this is a poor, poor world. If a man can't give a friend or neighbor a cold glass of milk. So he refused to take a dollar. Well, it wasn't long until a man drove down in the yard with a brand new pickup truck. And he said, are you Mr. So-and-so? He said, yes, I am. He said, well, we have orders to deliver this truck to you. He said, not to me. He said, I didn't order any truck. I can't afford a truck. He said, well, here's a note. And he opened the note and he read it. Dear Mr. Let's call him Jones. Dear Mr. Jones, there's a poor world. You can't give cold glass of milk to a neighbor. That man was Henry Ford, but he didn't know it at the time. You see, Henry Ford was a man who was the Ford Motor Company. And he got a brand new pickup truck for one glass of milk. Not a bad bargain, is it? But listen, he got a brand new pickup truck for showing kindness. You see? That's how he got it. He didn't expect it. He didn't want any payment. But God really, or I should say, he was really blessed as a result of his kindness. And he was just overjoyed, overwhelmed. Did he take the gift? Of course. Poor world. You can't give a friend a cold glass of milk. Oh, friends, listen. I like the sign that was over garage many, many years ago. You know, it said, less knock, more power. That meant, of course, less knock in your engines. Your piston rings are right and the engine is clean. You get better performance. Makes sense. And I looked at that sign. I said, boy, that's a good sign. I'd like to place a sign like that over some of our churches. People come by and see that sign over some churches, whatever that church name, and they see this other sign under it. Less knock, more power. Less criticism, more power. See? Well, the Lord can help us to do that, I'm sure. Someone said to a class of boys, what does meekness really mean? And there was a silence for a while. A little colored boy answered. You know what he said? He said, sir, he said, you speak soft when others speak rough. Not bad, eh? But not easy either. Because usually somebody speaks rough to us. We sort of retaliate and speak rough back. Huh? Like this fella driving behind another car, and the car was up at a red light. The red light turned green. He wouldn't move, and he kept honking his horn, and he was so mad. And then finally he came up alongside of the fella, and I had this happen to me in Palm Beach the other day. And however, he kept honking his horn, and then he went to show his fist, you know, in resentment. And then he realized it was one of the elders of his assembly. And he went like this. Man, hey, how are you, brother? You talking about a quick turn of attitude. It didn't look possible, I tell you, for a man to change so quickly. First it was the clenched fist he thought. He was just going to shake it, and he realized who he was. And, hi, brother. Oh, my. May the Lord just help us in this subject of bitterness, that God will give us grace and strength. We can only do it through Him when we allow Him to help us to do so. Not always easy, but yet it's so practical and so essential. Father, we thank You for Your Word. Sometimes it comes to our hearts like an arrow and very severe. But we thank You for the power that can make it possible. Help us, Lord, to be considerate, to be compassionate, to be tender-hearted, to be forgiven, and by Thy grace, O God, never to let a root of bitterness develop in our hearts for the glory of our God. Bless Your Word, bless Your dear children that are gathered here tonight. And again, we say our amens to the prayers that have been ascended. Remember the dear ones that are traveling Russia. They return to us shortly. Pray, O God, that You be with them in a special way. We commend them all to Your care. In the name of the Lord Jesus.